Hello and welcome, everyone. I'm Barb Giammanco, back with another action-packed sales mastery interview. Very excited to tell you about my guest, which I'll get to that in just a moment. You all know me as the co-author of The New Handshake, Sales Meets Social Media, and president here at Social Centered Selling. You also know I'm very passionate about bringing sales leaders together to share their advice and their experience with you to help you move those connections to close. With that in mind, I have another great interview queued up, so let me tell you about my guest. I'm talking today with Steve Martile. He is the owner of Freedom Education. Steve is an engineering consultant, blogger, and sales coach. He helps high-commission sales professionals that are struggling to make enough sales, streamline their sales techniques, and work more efficiently so that they can double or triple their commission checks. His ideal clients are realtors, mortgage brokers, high-performance sales professionals, and business owners who have been in business 4 to 5 years or more. They are big thinkers and ready to do the work that it takes to move their business to the next level. Last year, Steve was published with authors Bob Doyle and Janet Bray Atwood in Adventures in Manifesting. He lives 4 hours north of Toronto, Canada, with his wife, Tricia, and his best buddy, his pooch, Chloe. Steve, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Barb. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and so I loved when I was reading your bio that you've got a doggy as well. Love that. I do as well. His name is Clancy.
I love dogs, yeah. They're great.
They are. They are great pals. All right, well, listen, let's just jump right to it, shall we? Tell us how you got started coaching sales professionals.
Okay, awesome. So I actually have been a life coach since about 2006. In 2011, I ended up working with a client out of Toronto who was a sales professional, and it was his own business, but he was basically the front man for sales in his business, and we started working together privately as a one-on-one coaching. Now, before we started working together, Nick was earning around $5,000 to $10,000 a month. He had been a sales professional for about 20 years, and he was 51 years old at the time. So what happened is within 5 weeks of working together, his income went up to $15,800, and then it went down again, and then it went up again to $18,000 6 months later, and then about just over a year after we were working together, it went up to $24,000 in a single month. So it was Nick's idea, my client, who had said to me, "Oh, Steve, you really have something here," and that really sparked an interest and really got me interested in working specifically with sales professionals. So after that, I just focused my coaching business on sales professionals, and that's what I'm doing this year. And I've actually got the group training starting on Monday next week. So that's why I got into sales, targeting salespeople and working with them as a coach.
Absolutely. Well, I'm not surprised if your client got great results that they would suggest that you look at doing that, more full time. So that's great. So now you've kind of given us some sense of who you help. How do you do it? How are you helping your clients get those results that are actually lasting and consistent?
Okay, yeah. So Barb, there's actually five things that I help clients do. What I do is I actually help them first. Number one thing is clarify their direction. What I find is with a lot of the people that I work with is that they're trying to be too many things to too many people. So what I do is I get sales people focused on the lowest hanging fruit, the results that are going to get them the biggest bang for their buck. So if that's focusing on, revenue that's going to get them, say, $5,000 worth of commission as opposed to $100 commission, then that's what we do. We niche in that. They become a master marketer, a master salesperson at selling that one specific product. And then what we do is we diversify from there. But that's really the thing, is to be focused, because clarity leads to power. So the more focused you get, the more power you gain. So that's kind of the formula, is just to remember that clarity equals power. So that's the first thing that I help clients do. The second thing I help them do is I help them develop a strategic action plan. So what we do is we label 12 months out. We say, okay, whereabouts is your vision? What is it that you want to accomplish it? How much money do you want to make? And then what are you going to do with the money? And then when you know what you're going to do with the money and why you're doing it, then that draws in your emotions. You're very clear. We work backwards to basically today, and we say, okay, what do you need to do today to get you to that result? So we develop a strategic action plans for the each week. And then what they do is they execute that over the year, and as they do it, they end up achieving the goals. So that's the second thing I help clients do. The third thing I help clients do, which is really unique, is I help them boost their self-esteem. Now, most salespeople won't admit that they have low self-esteem, and that's not quite it. It's the way I kind of look at it, it's not that they have low self-esteem, it's that they have a poor self-image. Because it's their self-image, their self-portrait, in their mind's eye, how they see themselves, which is driving their actions and their behaviors. So if you have a very empowering self-image, an amplified self-image, basically when you the way you look at yourself is empowering to you, whatever that is for you, then what happens is your actions and emotions follow suit. They drive you towards amplifying and creating that self-image. Maxwell Maltz wrote a really good book called Psycho-Cybernetics in the 60s. Maxwell was actually a plastic surgeon, and he did aesthetic work on people. And what he found is that at the end of his career, that there were two different people that he always had worked with at the end of his career. The first person was someone who, you know, they had done the surgery. They'd come back to him and said, "I feel fantastic. I notice a difference. I feel great. Thank you so much for making the changes." And then there was the second person. And this is kind of what this is where I focus on. It's the person that after they made the physical changes, the outer changes to that person, what happens is they came back to Maxwell and said, "I don't look any different." Even though there was a physical change, you're like, "I don't notice the difference and I don't feel any different." And so what Maxwell concludes, and his entire book is based on this one principle, is that it's your self-image that creates your self-esteem, not the physical version of yourself. So that's the third thing I help clients do. And the fourth thing I help clients do, Barb, is I help them master their psychology. So there's two key distinctions here. The first key distinction is I help them install and imprint new empowering beliefs and thoughts about business, success, and money. You know, we're born with beliefs that we adopted from our parents or the people that grew that would basically took care of us when we were really young. So most of us don't have empowering thoughts about business, success, and money. So that's the first step, is to get clear in terms of what would be empowering, and then to start using different tools and techniques to imprint those new thoughts and beliefs over time so that you develop empowering beliefs about business, success, and money. The other side of that is that as you're doing that, you want to release any limiting beliefs, thoughts, fears, and stored emotions that you have about business success and money. And when you do those in parallel, you have a stellar combination for becoming successful very quickly or in a short period of time. And then the fifth thing I do, Barb, is I help clients with sales and marketing mastery. So that could be, you know, one-on-one conversations on the phone where I demonstrate enrollment techniques, demonstrate cold calling techniques, help them generate leads using online or social media, or even just helping them market their brand so that they get specific wording in place so they target their specific clientele. So those are the five things I do to help clients.
I love that. And I absolutely love how you start off with, you know, clarity leads to power. So the five things then are, we're going to clarify the direction, you help them create that strategic action plan, and boost the self-esteem and self-image, master their psychology, and then you help them with the things they need to do from a sales and marketing perspective in order to help generate those results that they're looking for.
You got it.
It's a great formula. It's a great formula. I especially liked number three and what you said about self-image, because isn't that true? We see that play out even on the stage with, you know, famous people who they go out and they get all this surgery, and then yet you continue to hear stories about how their life is spiraling out of control because clearly who they see in the mirror isn't any different, you know, before they went under the knife, so to speak. Very interesting.
I was talking to a client the other day, and the one gentleman I spoke to said, you know, you see this with a lot of comedians. They live like two lives. One life is that when they're in front of people, they're entertaining people, they have one self-image. And then, you know, they leave the stage and they go into depression and they're completely, you know, depressed. And so you've got these two different identities, but nothing really a dominant identity. So when I say about self-image, I'm talking about a dominant identity for you, you know, or for the client. It's something specifically that makes them kind of light up, and it's that self-image with how they see themselves in their mind's eye that really drives their behavior and their emotions. So, their behavior and their actions.
Yeah. So as we look at these five things, and one of the things that I love, and of course you and I had a prior conversation, one of the things that I love is that you actually have a formalized process to help people work through. And I think that is certainly based on my experience talking with a number of people who may be involved in coaching. And I think that's one thing certainly that sets you apart. So Steve, of the five things, of these key areas that you are working with your clients to put into practical application, which one in your mind really stands out as the one that's most important?
Okay, so based on how much we've been talking about self-image, you would think that would be the one that's sort of like in the highlight. But what I honestly have seen in the past is that it's around mastering your psychology, and to be specific, it's about self-imposed beliefs. It's interesting because I talked to a few salespeople this week, and what they've been telling me is that, you know, their goal is to get a 10 or 20% increase on their sales over the next year. I'm not interested in working with salespeople that only want a 10 or 20% increase because I know that the upper limit is way more than what they think is possible. So let me explain this self-imposed belief and how it impacts them. I'll give you an example, and it just happened over the last week, which I thought was pretty crazy. But we have a young puppy, as I mentioned at the beginning of the call, or you had brought up, and she's about 2.5 years old. And we've had her in a crate for about since she was 2.5. We've always kept her in a crate. And what we do is at night we put her in the crate. Basically, it's just a little cage, and we close the door, and then we lock the door on the cage, and then we go to sleep because we don't want her wandering around at night kind of messing around in the house. So what we do in the morning is we go and we open the door and we unlock it. What my wife did, and I don't know if she did it intentionally, but last week what she did is she put our dog Chloe in the crate, closed the door, but did not lock it. So in the morning what we did is we called her, and all she had to do was push the door open with her nose, but she didn't. She just had this, you know, her environment had conditioned her to believe that door was not going to open. So what we did is we're like, I'm going to try this again. So what we did another night is we actually we put her in the cage again, in the crate, and we closed the door, but we didn't lock it. And did it again. We kind of called her, and she's sitting right at the door. All she has to do is push it open with her nose, but she doesn't do it. So what's happened is that she's got this self-imposed limiting belief about what's possible for her universe, for herself. And that's what I see what happens with sales professionals. What they do is they pick outcomes over the next 12 months that they think is possible. But that's not what's possible. That's just their self-imposed limiting belief. And they're basing it on the income they've had in the last few years or their revenue or their profits. And it's what happens is that their environment, in other words, their results, are what they're using as a basis for setting their goals for the future. And that's not it at all. I mean, when I worked with Nick back in 2011, he's a sales professional out of Toronto. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being I absolutely know I can achieve, a 2.5 or 300% increase in profits over the next 12 months, there was no way in hell. He was like a 1 or a 2 on a scale of 1 to 10. 10 being I absolutely know I can do it, and 1 being there's no way in hell. He was like, you know, there's no way in hell. But he did it. So what I'm suggesting is that if salespeople listening to the call is that you got to set goals that really drive you and that are beyond what your current belief system is letting you believe that you can achieve. And once you do that, and this is another key point to it, is that actually I'll get into that later, but I think the main thing is that you should be setting goals that you don't necessarily believe. That might be hard for a lot of people to swallow, but you know, if you're setting goals that on a scale of 1 to 10 are, you know, an 8, 9, or 10, that's not enough of a stretch. You can go further, and you don't even know what's possible.
Interesting. Now, didn't you say something a little bit earlier that kind of caught my attention because I've heard this before? Isn't there something there about understanding why you want to reach a particular goal or why you want the money that you sort of envision for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's one of the things that I cover with clients when they first join, is that we get clear on the outcome, then we talk about what they would do with the money. And sometimes that's, you know, some of these people, they just want to, like, you know, give money to, because their daughter's getting married and they want to be able to support them. Some other people want to give it to a cause for less privileged people. Some people want to buy the car and buy the house and do all that stuff too, or pay off some bills. But at the end of the day, when I ask people, why do you want that? Like, why is that the best part? They say the best part would be, you know, maybe giving it to, less privileged people. There was one gentleman I was speaking to, he wants to support an orphanage. And I said, well, why is that the best part? And he said, because that's what I believe I'm here to do. He goes, that would be the ultimate thing, is if I could just give to that other person that's less privileged. And so when you're clear on that, yeah, that helps you build the desire to actually achieve the goal. And that's another thing. I mean, you can measure the belief to achieve the goal. That might be low in the beginning, but as long as the desire is high, so on a scale of 1 to 10 again, if your desire is a 10, 10 being I absolutely desire this, and 1 is no desire at all, then you want to be close to an 8, 9, or 10 in desire. But the belief is not necessary in the beginning.
Right. Yeah. And I absolutely believe that, because, you know, we've both been in sales for a long time, and, you know, there are going to be up and down times. And I believe that if you really have that burning passion and desire, and you know why you want to accomplish what you're setting out to do, I know for myself through the years selling, that's always led to me picking myself up and saying, that's okay, that deal didn't work out, but there are other opportunities down the road, which is pretty cool. So what do you think, Steve, are some of the big mistakes in the work that you're doing with sales professionals? What are some of the mistakes that they are making in terms of setting their own goals? I mean, one thing I heard you say is that probably setting the bar too low. Is there anything else?
Yeah, so, and I'll build on that, because it's a great point. So setting the bar too low is definitely one thing, but there's a caveat to that. So let's say that the goal that you have right now is double what you've currently generated, and we can pick revenue or profits, it doesn't matter, but let's say over the next 12 months, you want to double that, okay? And on a scale of 1 to 10, you think to yourself, 10 being, I absolutely know I can do this, 1, there's no way in hell, you're about a 3. What most people don't understand is that that's your 12-month goal, so you set that as your 12-month goal. What you want to do next is you want to actually, and most people don't go that this far, but what you want to do next is you want to take a goal for you over the next 90 days that's about an 8 out of 10 in believability. So let's say it's 20% more than you're earning now, or 15%. Take that, and that's your 90-day goal. What happens is you go the 90 days, you give it your best shot, you go and make looking to achieve that 90-day goal. If after 90 days you do achieve it, what happens is your believability for your 12-month goal goes up. So instead of it being a 3 out of 10, it might be a 4 or a 5 out of 10. Then what you do again is after the next 90 days following this 90-day period, so we're looking 6 months into the future, you set another 90-day goal. In this case, you pick another goal that might be 15 or 20% more than what you achieved last 3 months, and then you set that as your goal. And the believability for that goal should be an 8, 9, or a 10. Then you achieve that goal. You're 6 months into the year, you've achieved two different goals, which has moved up your belief for the final goal. So now the final goal, the one that originally at the beginning of the year was to double, is now maybe a 6 or 7. And you do the process over and over again until you reach the final goal. That's what most people are not doing. They're picking goals for the entire year that's going to move them up 10, 20%. What I'm saying is double your income. Set that as the goal. Maybe triple. And then work every 90 days to get further and further so that you believe, you get to the end of the year and you believe, you know, without a doubt, that you're going to achieve that final goal.
Well, I love that. So break it down in chunks. And it also strikes me as it makes it less overwhelming. I think about, I go through this every year, my thoughts around setting New Year's resolutions, right? And I have never really believed in that, because people set these arbitrary things and then, you know, they're really not committed to it. They don't know why they want it. They just maybe think they should do it. And then, of course, we all know what happens, you know, good intentions and it never happens. And I can see, as I'm thinking about this, because one of the great things about bringing on experts like yourself is I always pick up something new and something I'm learning from. I was just thinking about that for myself in my own business. Am I chunking it down enough and really focusing my attention on that and then continuing to build on the momentum and success?
Cool.
Yeah. So Thanks for that great coaching tip, because, you know, I do look 30, 60, 90, 6 months, but I love the idea of really zeroing in on focusing on that 90-day achievement and then going from there. So that's pretty cool. Now, you know, a lot of what we're talking about here ultimately means that people have to take action, right? They have to execute. So what in your mind stops salespeople who might create a plan and they've got great intentions, they're doing all these things, but then they don't take the action and they're not focused on doing what they need to do in order to reach the level of success they want?
I would say that the number one thing, and this might shock a lot of people, is that the number one thing that prevents people or slows them down from achieving their goals is fear. Now, why would I say that? The reason I say that is because there are only really two things that motivate people. You're either moving towards pleasure or you're moving away from pain. So if some experience, a cold call is a great example, creates fear, creates pain, you move away from it. You're not gonna move towards it. People tend, by naturally, their behaviors to move away from fear, move away from pain. So the activities that they actually need to do to reach their end goal drums up this fear. And that fear is what drives them to move away from the goal. Now, on the opposite end of things, you can also use desire to help you move towards the goal. But in most cases, the fear is just too strong or stronger than, you know, the desire they have for that end goal. So the fear is really the big thing. And it could be, you know, fear of failure, fear of the unknown, a fear of being successful. But at the end of the day, it's really that fear that drives their behavior. So one of the things that we talked about earlier is that the fourth thing that I help clients do is to let go of stored emotions, fears, and limiting beliefs. But that's the key, is that you want to let go of those fears. And as soon as you let go of those fears, then you can take action, because the desire overwhelms you. You just feel the desire. That's all you feel. And you feel good, so you're going to move towards that goal.
Well, and here's one thing I wanted to have you draw out a little bit more, because I found for my own self, you know, for myself, this was something that came as a surprise to me and something that I worked through and keep an eye on. But the fear of success, which I think surprises some people, well, why would we be afraid of success? So can you speak to that a little bit more, what you've seen in your work with clients, why sometimes they might fear actually being successful and hitting the goals that they say that they want?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk from my own experience. You know, when I got over the six-figure mark, we ended up moving into a really beautiful house in a beautiful neighborhood, and it was twice as big as the house we had before. And one of my fears was when people, when people drove by and I was out in the driveway, I'm like, I wonder what they're thinking about me. I wonder what they're wondering. They're like, you know, I thought all these ill thoughts. I felt like bad that I was living in this house and that there were other people driving by, not in the neighborhood. I don't know. Maybe it was my ego kicking in, but I felt this just negative vibe I got from people. And it was all me. It was self-created. And it was funny because my wife went through the same thing, where we just didn't feel that, you know, we were like, this is our house, but, you know, we almost didn't feel worth it. And then after about, for me, it was a couple months, I got used to the idea, and I was like, oh, no, it's okay. Those people are just driving out to check out the neighborhood because there's nice homes here. It was no longer an issue. So, I mean, ultimately, those fears are what drum up the self-talk that generates these negative thoughts. So if the fear is not there, you eliminate the source, then what happens is the self-talk doesn't perpetuate. It doesn't become part of your self-talk, and then it's no longer a problem. Does that kind of answer the question?
It does. And what's interesting about that, Steve, is that I notice, certainly here in the United States, sometimes there is a real tendency, and I found this to be a message that was communicated to me from my parents, and that was part of what I sort of went through. And I know sometimes in the U.S., and I just saw something recently, a Facebook post, sometimes there is a tendency to look at people who have wealth and assume that they are somehow taking away from someone else. And, you know, I do not believe that that is true, and also I do not believe that money is the root of all evil, and I do not believe that somebody living in a much bigger house than me is not a good person. And I think that it sort of strikes me that that might have been what you're feeling. Now, I will tell you that I'm one of those people who loves to drive through neighborhoods with these big homes, because that's part of what I do to kind of visualize the next level that I'm looking to achieve. And you know, when I was thinking about, why would I be afraid of success? Well, it was kind of funny. What happened for me is I realized, I was thinking that a lot of success meant a lot more responsibility, and there were some things that I had to work through in terms of that kind of thinking myself. So really appreciate you talking more about that, because I think people forget that there can be some fears of success that are holding you back and you don't even realize it.
Yeah, absolutely. You bring up a good point, because that came up for me too when we moved into this home, is like fear of responsibility or this additional responsibility. But I guess this is what, you know, I found in my own experience, is that, let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, I feel that in my growth, in my path, you know, that here on this planet, I'm about a 6 out of 10. I got some room to grow. I've improved a lot, you know, over the years, but I'm still a 6 out of 10. A 10 is like peak power. That was a place, you know, that's where I'm kind of going. And, you know, moving into a new home in a new neighborhood, that's like a 9 out of 10. You know, like, that's a big deal. If I'm a 6 and I'm looking up at a 9, I'm thinking, man, that's a lot of responsibility. How can I do this? But what happened is what I did is I had to go through a lot of stuff to get into the house. It wasn't just a slam dunk. You know, it took us time to get here. And when I did get in the house and I started to feel comfortable with it, I became a 10. I was a 10. And I looked down at a 9 having this house, and I'm like, that's not such a big deal. So if you work on yourself and improve yourself, responsibility kind of, it doesn't go out of the equation, but just seems like less of a big deal.
Sure, absolutely. Well, and that must be part of what you help your clients with in terms of mastering that psychology, because what we're talking about are these are the things that probably surface that I'm betting a lot of times your clients don't even realize that that's down in there somewhere. So is that a fair statement?
Yeah, there's really, again, it comes back to the two things I mentioned before, is that there's two key distinctions around mastering psychology. That the one is, you want to imprint new thoughts and beliefs about business success and money. And the reason I say that is because, you know, Bruce Lipton wrote a really, really good book. He's on YouTube. Just Google him. It's Bruce Lipton, Lipton like the soup. And he's got a great book out there. It's called The Biology of Belief. And what Bruce says is that at least 95% of our beliefs were formed, and that includes money, beliefs about money, were formed when we were between the ages of 0 and 5 years old. And the reason he says that is because of the brainwave state that we have at that time, that part of our life. We're in a theta-alpha state. And so I won't get into it, but ultimately, when you're in that brain, when your brain is in that state, and that state, an alpha would be like, you know, you're waking up in the morning, and you're kind of groggy, you're sort of awake, but you're sort of out of it. That's sort of alpha theta. And when you're in that state, that brainwave state, your subconscious is very susceptible to information. In other words, the environment that is around you, the sounds and the pictures that you're getting from your environment are very, very, what they do is they imprint in your subconscious at that state. And it just turns out that babies up to 5 years old are in the alpha theta state. So everything in their environment becomes part of their conditioning. It comes part of their beliefs. So if your parents didn't have a lot of money, or you heard, you know, you got to save money for a rainy day, or, you know, money's the root of all evil, or don't talk to those people, you can't trust rich people, that becomes your dominant belief. So I think that's the reason why I spent a lot of time on mastery psychology, is because people just have junk in their head. They're junk in their subconscious. And that over time, what happens is you print, using specific techniques and tools, as you imprint new thoughts and beliefs, you start to feel empowered about money, business, and success. And then the other distinction is, same time, letting go of your fears, stored emotions, and limiting beliefs about business, money, and success.
Awesome. Well, Steve, in just a moment, I'm going to have you tell people how they can reach out to you to learn more about your coaching and other business services. But before I do, I always like to ask the guests who join me, you know, if there's just the one thing that you want someone to really take away from this conversation, what would that be?
Well, I once was in a workshop where the trainer had said, you know, if you take action within, one day of hearing some great information, then you're 90% more likely to do it. If you wait 2 days, that goes down to like 60%. And then if you wait a week, it's like 10%. So whatever you got today, whatever information or little nugget you got, if it inspired you to kind of search more or to look more or even to maybe to sign up and check out my email newsletter, whatever it is, whatever you're inspired to do now after listening to this call, act now. Don't delay. Get on it and just do it right now.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to put that to I'm going to put that into practical application, and I'm going to send you a note and let you know what I did in the next week as a result of this call. How's that?
Awesome. That sounds great.
All right. Well, let's tell people about a little bit more about your coaching and your services and how they can reach you and connect with you.
Okay, great. Well, Barb, if anyone listening to the call wants to get onto my email newsletter, they want to go to insiderSellingSecrets.com. That's insiderSellingSecrets.com. There's an opt-in page there. What you'll learn is you'll discover why 7% of sales professionals conduct 93% of business and what three insider selling secrets help these sales professionals multiply their commissions and make more money starting right now. If you want to learn more about what I do, that's the best way to get a hold of me. Check out my newsletter, and I wish you a fantastic year and a fantastic 12 months from now.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to join me to share your secrets to sales mastery. I really appreciate it, Steve.
You're welcome, Barb, and it's been a pleasure being on the call with you.
All right. Well, thanks so much. And thanks to everybody who's been listening today. I've been talking with Steve Martile. He is the owner of Freedom Education. Again, go visit his website at insiderSellingSecrets.com. Get signed up for his newsletter. I'm going to do it. That's one of the things that I'm going to execute in the next week. And take advantage of some of the things that he's shared with you and follow up with him about his coaching and other business services. I'm Barb Giamanco, as you know, hosting the Sales Mastery Interview Series. Love it because I get to talk to great sales leaders like Steve and sincerely mean it. I learn something new each time. I always find something really cool that I can put into practical application, and I know you tell me the same thing. So thanks so much for joining us on another program. Remember, if you'd like to learn more about the work that we do at Social Centered Selling with Sales Teams, visit us on the web at scs-connect.com. Thanks to everybody for listening. Now get out there and sell something.